Good morning and welcome back to Nachyomi. Today we are beginning a new Sefer, Megillas Rus. This is a very short Megillah, it only is comprised of four prokem, and we know it, or we think we know it, but it's worthwhile re-examining the text, re-examining the Megillah from a new perspective, from an open perspective, as you learn it once again. Our Megillah is 85 psukim long and four prokem, although the chapter divisions are not necessarily Jewish, so they're less relevant to us. Technically speaking, there are really eight different parts to this Megillah. The first five psukim describe the movement of the scene in the fields of Moab. Then from psukim Vav to Yud Ches, in the first parak, is their return, or the way to return from Bethlehem to Bethlehem, to Beis Lechem. The first parak from psukim Yud Tes to Chaf Aleph, or the third section of the Sefer, the arrival in Bethlehem and Beis Lechem. The second parak in totality is the days of harvest and what goes on, and then the third perek in totality is the granary scene at night. And the fourth perek is divided into three sections: at the gate, the beginning, the good ending of the story, and finally the background of David HaMelech. It's a short Megillah, there's a lot of drama, and there's a lot of fascinating character development as well. In terms of understanding the authorship of our Megillah, the Gemara in Baba Basra on Daf Yud Daled Amud Beis is very clear that Shmuel Kosov Sifrei, Shmuel wrote Sefer Shmuel, and he wrote Shoftim and Megillas Rus. And there are those academics who would suggest this was actually written at a later period in time, at the time of Shivas Tzion, the Second Commonwealth, much later on. But this does not seem to be conclusive. First of all, the words seem to be very clearly words that were used in an earlier period of time. And number two is, then why would they pen something which is so much later on, which is seemingly critical or of the House of David, seemingly introducing complexity to the House of David, if it would be something which were written so much later on? In a certain sense, there would be more of a whitewashing of history if that would be the case. So that is not a tenable suggestion. In terms of the dating of the Sefer, we know that the Sefer is introduced by Hebi Mei Shvoit HaShoftim, was the day that the judges were being judged. The Gemara takes that to be a negative thing, that there was a certain sense of anarchy in society. But nonetheless, Shoftim is a period in time which stretches essentially from the second generation of Boyei Aretz, of those who entered the land of Israel, until essentially monarchy was established, until the times of Shaul HaMelech. Shmuel essentially was the last Shofet, and so for that period of time, stretched all the way from the entrance of the land, it's roughly a 370 years period of time. It's a very significant period of time, and that's when it's dated. That being the case, the question is who is the Shofet at the time? Meaning, can we understand when precisely in the book of Shoftim this existed, when this book actually took place? So there are a number of opinions in the Gemara. The Gemara in Baba Basra on Daf Tzadi Aleph Umar Aleph discusses this particular topic. Some suggest that in fact it occurred at the beginning of the Sefer, around the times of the earlier Shoftim, Shamgar ben Anas and Ehud ben Gera. There are those, Rabbi Bar Yitzchak, who suggest that it's a generation later, the times of Barak and Devorah. But there are those who say Rav, in the name of Rav, it is suggested that in fact it was at the times of Ivtsan. Ivtsan was Boaz, meaning to say that the character in our Megillah called Boaz was in fact the Shofet Ivtsan. Ivtsan was in the latter half of Sefer Shoftim. He is 18 years before Shimshon HaGibor, and he judged for 7 years. We don't know so much about him explicitly from the text of Tanakh, but this, in a certain sense, will make sense. It is interesting to note that from outside text, from Josephus in Antiquities, notes that he was the times of Eli, which is the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, just a little bit later than Ivtsan necessarily. Be it as it may, if you work backwards, we know that in fact there are four generations separating Boaz and David. And if that be the case, on taking an average generation to be 25 years, which we're thinking about perhaps looking at about 100 years, which places it squarely around the times of Ivtsan and potentially Shimshon Eli, which makes a lot of sense. So the general tone of society is one of a little bit of anarchy, where there are good leaders who give leadership for a few generations, a few years, and then things fall apart. The most important thing to understand when trying to understand the Sefer, we know the story of the Sefer, or we think we do, but and there's many parallel stories, but the question that we really ought to ask ourselves as we open Megillas Rus is, what is the purpose of a Sefer? If this is simply a story that occurs in the times of Shoftim, then why would it not be a subsection, another chapter in the book of Shoftim itself? It's very unusual to have another narrative at the time of a book which already has a narrative. Meaning, we understand that Yeshayahu HaNavi falls into the rubric of the timeline of Sefer Melachim. We understand that Yechezkel and Yirmiyahu match up the timeline and the narrative in Sefer Melachim, But in the end of the day, they're very little independent narrative. Meaning we have a little bit of narrative here, a little bit of narrative there, but the most predominant feature of the Svarim, of these Nevi'im Achronim, are their Nevuos, are their prophecies. That being the case, why would a Sefer, which does include an independent narrative like Rus, another story, not simply be a subsection of Sefer Shoftim? Why is it unique? Why was it penned independently, certainly if the author is the same as Sefer Shoftim? So the Ibn Ezra at the very beginning says, it was written to introduce David HaMelech. It seems pretty clear that the Megillah culminates in David HaMelech's birth. Seems to indicate that the purpose of the Sefer is to yield David HaMelech, the Yichus of David HaMelech, his legacy. But the question that one would have to raise on this is that, you know, it seems more that the Megillah is telling you that Rus begot David rather than David was a descendant of Rus. Meaning, if the whole point is just to tell you where David HaMelech came from, then we could do very little. We don't need to have all the story and the drama and the backwards and the forwards and the granary and the feet and the whole business. We could just understand, you know, give a little bit of background, and now we know, yes, David HaMelech comes from Rus. But in the end of the day, it seems that it's more focused. It's very hard to say that the last five psukim are the point in of the entire Megillah when there seems to be a whole drama just unfolding early on. That's a question we could ask in this approach. There's another approach which is suggested and adopted by many, which is based on the Megillah, the Medrash in Rus Rabbah in Perek Beis, which says, Omer Rabbi Zera would say, Megillah zu ein bo lei tuma, bo lei tara, bo lei isur, bo lei heter. There's no purity or impurity. There's no isur and heter. Those are permissive or non-permissive activities or foods. V'lama nechtova, why was it written? So the Medrash addresses our very question. L'lamedcha, to teach you, Kama schar tov legomne chasadim. How much reward those who do chesed get? Now, what's fascinating about this is that this medrash posits that there's no halachas taught in this Megillah on the face of it, which is strange because Megillah's Rus has really a lot of halachas. There's matonas aniyim, all the different types of gifts given to the poor in the field, which are talked about in the Megillah. We know the halachas of yibum and chalitza are talked about in this Megillah. The halachas of gulas sadeh, of redeeming a field that had to be sold under poverty is in this Megillah. We know the halachas of kinin chalipin, the isra of amoni va moavi, intermarriage in the community from different nations. There seems to be a lot of halachas which are talked about in this Megillah. So what is Rabbi Zera really getting at? Now, Rabbi Zera, to be fair, was talking about Isser and Heter and Tumantara, not these specific halachas. But perhaps the way to understand this argues the Dat Mikra Pirush on Megillah's Rus, that if you look at the Megillah, the predominant idea the Megillah seems to be focusing on is the notion of going above and beyond the call of duty. Meaning, Elimelech was seems to be the kind of person who's a quid pro quo kind of person. You know, it isn't working out for us here. We're going to have to give a lot of our money. It's not fair that other people are in a difficult situation. We'll go somewhere else. We'll invest elsewhere until the sky is clear. Rus is the opposite. Rus is the kind of person who had every reason to abandon her mother-in-law, had every reason to leave things behind and say, you know, this is your problem, I'm so sorry about this, and I'm kind of done. But for the sake of her lost husband, for the sake of Naomi, her mother-in-law, for the sake of the field, for the sake of Boaz, for the sake of everybody else, she does what is not expected, what is certainly not something anticipated of her. And the idea what Rabbi Zera seems to be focusing on is this is a Megillah talking about the notion of above and beyond. And that's what the Rabbi Zera is saying. This is not a Megillah about a halacha, because halacha is telling you what to do, what's required of you. Rus did a whole lot of things that she was simply not required to do. That's what the Megillah is teaching us. However, if we want to come back to the first suggestion of the Ibn Ezra for a moment, Ibn Ezra says this is in order to get to David HaMelech. Why is this so important? So it goes back to a very important point, and that is that the author of our Megillah, in fact, was Shmuel HaNavi. Why is that significant? Because Shmuel HaNavi had a very, very close connection to the first king of Israel, and that was Shaul HaMelech. He was the one who sought him out. He was the one who anointed him. He was the one who coronated him. And in fact, it says when Shaul HaMelech was rejected, when Shaul HaMelech did not live up to his standards, that's when it says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns to him and says, why are you so upset? The Sforno says that he was almost mourning for the loss of Shaul, his progeny. He so wished that Shaul HaMelech could have made it, could have been the A person. In fact, later on, when Shmuel HaNavi is sent to anoint David in the stead of Shaul, while this is happening, Shmuel HaNavi goes and he's looking through the sons of Yishai, and he turns to the oldest and the tallest and he says, is this not the one? And the Mefarshim say the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds to him and says, I don't look at his heart or his beauty, I look into his heart. And the Mefarshim say, you know why he had to say that? Because Shaul, in a sense, Shmuel was seeing the vision, the image of his king, which was Shaul HaMelech, and he was projecting that onto who he expected David HaMelech to be. And David was everything but that. He wasn't this tall, handsome person. He was a person who was red-haired and small, a person who had a look like he was bloodthirsty, a person who was a more complex person who was rejected from the family. That was the one that HaKadosh Baruch Hu turned, because he said he turned to. But Shmuel HaNavi had a very difficult time. In fact, as opposed to when he anointed Shaul HaMelech and he kissed him, he never kissed David HaMelech. It was very difficult. In fact, after he anoints David HaMelech, he has very little dealings with David. He really rarely features there on in the Sefer. And this leads us to a very important point. When David HaMelech finally kills Goliath and he starts rising in the ranks of power and in society, it says that Shaul HaMelech says, who is this boy? Where does he come from? And he knew he was. He was playing music for him up till now. He was involved in his court. Why was it that? Why was he asking this? The Gemara in Yevamos on Daf Ayin Vavam Beis tells us that Doeg HaDomi interceded and said, before you ask who he is, because Shaul HaMelech was getting worried that this looks like kingly action. So it looks like the action of a monarch. He says, maybe he shouldn't enter into the Kahal in the first place. Maybe he's not even worthy. Because you know what? Guess who his great-great-grandmother was? That was Rus HaMoaviyah, says Doeg HaDomi. He has no right to even be in the congregation, let alone be a king, as the Doeg HaMelech says. And it says that there was a large fight in the Beis Medrash. People got very upset about this. And ultimately, there was one of the defendants of David HaMelech comes up and he stands up there and he says the following. He says, yeah, he goes on and he says, Omar, he says the following. Kol mi she'eino shomea halacha zu yedakeh b'cherev. Whoever does not accept this halacha will be slaughtered. Kach mekubloni mi beis din shel Shmuel HaRamos. This is what I received from the tent of meeting, or the beis medrash of Shmuel. That Amoni v'lo Amonis, Moavi v'lo Moavis, the only people who are not allowed to enjoy in the community are the males of these two nations, not the females, and therefore David HaMelech is legitimate to come to this nation. Where does he quote this teaching from? It is quoted from the Beis Din Shel Shmuel HaRamasi. Shmuel himself taught this teaching. Where did Shmuel teach this, pray tell? Where exactly did he get this from? And the argument that Rav Yehoshua Bachrach renders, it's a very remarkable suggestion, is the Beis Din of Shmuel was Megillas Rus. When he wrote Megillas Rus, it was Shmuel's turning point. It was his realization that although his perspective of who the king should be was a Shaul HaMelech, and that was shattered on the floor, and it did not turn out to be the way he wanted to, Plan B was ultimately what he embraced. He still understood that David HaMelech should be the king. And when he embraced that, he wrote this book to verify the very underpinnings, to make transparent to the public that there should be no concerns about the legacy and legitimacy of David HaMelech. That's the writing of Megillas Rus. It was Shmuel HaMelech's attempt to lay this matter to rest. And that's why it says the end of the kingship of Shaul, when Shaul HaMelech is chasing David. David HaMelech runs to Shmuel, the last meeting he has with Shmuel, and he meets in a place which is called Ramos, Nayab Ramos. It is a place which is called Nayot Barama. What is this place? The Gemara in Zochim says, Dorash Rava. What does it mean? And it says, Zochima Inyan Nayos Esel Rama. What is Nayot got to do with Rama? Elo Shayu Yoshin Barama. They were on a high place, on an area that was lofty. For Eskim Bin Nayos Shalayam. I'm now talking about the Binyan Shal Olam, which is the Beis Hamikdash. Shmuel HaNavi, finally, the end of his life, his last act of teaching was to teach David HaMelech, the new progeny, the new student, the new one who is going to lead the legacy, to how to build the Beis HaMikdash, because that was the transfer of power, and this is the expression of it, is his writing, Megillas Rus. So yes, it's a whole Megillah about the story of Rus, but it ultimately is legitimizing David HaMelech's own legacy. In the meantime, have a wonderful, meaningful day. We'll start Megillas Rus tomorrow.